Hello, Rabbi. Wait a minute. Where's the Rabbi? He's not here. Oh, gosh, it's just me. Well, hey, everybody. It's Father Christian. The Rabbi has left me just for today's episode. He is off doing powerful things in the state of Georgia with the youth at wonderful, wonderful camps. And I'm all alone. So I'm going to bring on a good friend of mine. He's going to call in Reverend Scott Gunn from Forward Movement. Forward Movement is one thing. It does a lot of publishing, but also it has tremendous resources for those within the church, particularly the Episcopal Church, that are looking for growth, development, their own discernment, growing into a life of Jesus. And the reason why I bring him on is because he has a tremendous amount of experience within the church at large. He sees a lot of the church from coast to coast. And I want to continue on this theme that the rabbi and I have talked about the declining numbers of religious attendance. And why is that? We continue to explore that. Is that because there's more atheists, or is it because the church or the temple is just totally out of sync with society? Is it because of people just do not like religion, or is it people are hungering? They are hungering for a relationship with the higher power, but they just are not finding it within the church, so, or the synagogue. So we will continue that exploration today, and the theme will be, is the church boring us to death? That is a theme that Reverend Scott Gunn is the church boring us to death? So I would love for you to leave a comment on whatever platform you're on right now of what are your thoughts on that. Is the church boring us to death? Why are people not showing up to church? What is the church? What are the benefits of church and having a relationship with God? Just let us know. This is the stuff that we love to talk about, or the temple or the mosque or wherever you attend a religious family. And we are so grateful that you're here on this podcast. And so it means the world to us. And if you would tell others about this, that's how we grow. That's how we get more people involved with this community. And one way to do that is, if you're listening to this on your phone right now, you're at the gym or you're in the car, when you're in a safe space for you to take a screenshot and to send this out and say, hey, the priest and the rabbi is this fun podcast we love listening to, and for you to share with others and like, and it'd be great. So thank you so much. God bless you. And if you ever want to also follow this wacky guy who you're listening to right now, you can also catch me on Your Favorite Christian. It's a podcast. It is a YouTube channel, the vlog, and so it's a day in the life of a priest, and you can see things where from my travels throughout the world, throughout the country, and also at the church, of what it's like to really be a priest, and taking on some topics from relationships to marriage to dating to race. So we get into all that. So God bless you. Enjoy the show, and without further ado, let's bring in Scott Gunn and get into this week's podcast. Peace.
The opinions expressed on this program are those of the program hosts and their guests and are not necessarily those of WSTU, St. Mary's Episcopal Church, and Temple Beit Haim. Products that may be mentioned are not necessarily intended as an endorsement. Any reproduction or retransmission of this broadcast is strictly prohibited. And now, WSTU presents a priest and a rabbi. Call in with questions and comments at 220-9788. 220-WSTU. Now, here's your host.
Good morning, Stuart, Florida. This is Father Christian from St. Mary's Episcopal Church, and it is a joy to have you on the airwaves this morning here. You might be on your way to church. You might be on your way to temple. You might be on your way to mosque. You might be on your way to work. You might be on the way to see your grandkids. But it is great to have you right here listening to us. And as you know, this is a station where we take on all things of faith, from an interfaith lens to do that. And today I am all by myself. My rabbi has left me. He is on assignment. He's on a camp somewhere in Georgia, saving the youth up for tomorrow. And so it is just me. But I couldn't just do this solo today. I had to bring in a big gun, a top gun, our own personal maverick. It is Scott Gunn, the Reverend Scott Gunn of Forward Movement Publications. He is the executive director, and bringing this fine young man onto the show because today we're going to be talking about, is the church boring us to death? Is it boring us all to death? And is that, and as you know, that is a theme that Rabbi Matthew and I have taken on many times, that because of the decrease in the numbers and the lower numbers that we've seen across the board of three major religions that we see here in the States, whether it's Islam or Judaism or Christianity, why is that? And we've explored that before. Is that because there's more atheists? Is it because the church just doesn't get it? Is it just because the people just over the church? So we're always exploring that topic. Why are people not showing up to church like they used to? Is it cultural? And so I want to continue that, but bring on someone who has had his fair share of exposure to at least the Episcopal Church in the United States. He tours around, he does retreats, he preaches all over, and because of his work at a major publishing house, he's seen a lot of literature and scholarship on this. So, Reverend Scott, you are a maverick today. It is great to have you on the air. How are you, my brother?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
So well. And you're the executive director of Forward Movement Publications, and can you give a little bit about what does that mean to our audience?
Sure, yeah. Forward Movement is a ministry of the, we're part of the Episcopal Church, and our job, we were given this job in 1934, is to reinvigorate the life of the church. So we're trying to make church relevant and compelling for people, which I think is actually part of just doing what Jesus told us to do. I know, by the way, I'm honored to be filling in for your rabbi, and so I, of course, am not a rabbi, I'm a priest, but, we worship a rabbi, so I hope that counts for something. And I'm sure that joke's been used many times. But Forward Movement, so we offer conferences, we have apps, websites, we publish books, and I travel around as a speaker and a preacher and often a listener just to learn what's going on in churches and in people's lives.
Yeah, and you have seen, and I've been where you've come to Southeast Florida, where we're at, and I've heard you lead our clergy conferences or diocesan conferences. I've seen you at retreats. I've seen you at various conferences around the country. And so you have seen a lot of the culture in the church. You have talked and worshiped with a lot of the leaders, but not only worship, but also led them through processes of trying to understand how to do church better, if that's a right term to use. And so today, with this theme of us exploring this idea of is the church boring us to death? That was a theme that you came up with, or something you raised. And I was like, oh, that's good. We're using that for the radio show. So where did that idea come from, or just that theme?
Well, yeah. So I think for many decades in the U.S., Christianity was able to ride the coattails of culture. We lived in what we in the church, call Christendom, this land where we could assume, and you must love this because your first name is Christian, where we could assume that the Judeo-Christian religion was the norm, and churches didn't have to work too hard because when you move to a new town, you join the Rotary Club and the local church, or I guess if you were Jewish, you went to the temple or the synagogue, and the church could assume that people in their homes were learning about faith, so the church didn't have to work too hard to teach it or to explain why it mattered, and the church didn't really even have to work that hard to be compelling because people automatically had this unarticulated pressure to show up and be there and contribute. Well, as we all know, the era of Christendom is over, and there's among younger adults, there's more peer pressure now not to go to religious services than there is to go to religious services. And so the church and people, when I was a parish priest, I used to get the question sometimes, very nicely, no one ever asked me this in an angry way, very nicely somebody would say, hey, I love Sunday morning, I love hanging out in the coffee shop, I love going to the beach, I love going to the mall, whatever they would say, I love doing that. Tell me why I should come to church. What's in it for me? They would ask me. And that's a question the church didn't have to answer until about a decade ago. And if our answer is we're a good social club, we like each other, we're nice, we do outreach work, all those things people can find better outside the church. The thing we have to be focused on is the transformational nature of our religious proclamation. You know, in the case of Christianity, we talk about Jesus. In the case of other religions, they talk about whatever they talk about. And I think we have not done a good job of understanding and sharing our compelling message.
So so what I'm hearing from you is that the church is just gotten lazy.
That is exactly what I'm saying. We didn't have to work, and we forgot why we're around, and we're just and by the way, it was very convenient to be to share in that prestigious position, so that people in power wanted to be seen as part of the church, and in some places that's still true. So that's convenient, and I think, again, I know that you approach things from an interfaith lens, but speaking as a Christian, I think that when we follow Jesus, that inherently challenges secular models of power and might and prestige, and we didn't want to do that because that's uncomfortable. So yeah, we got complacent, and it's boring. It's just not interesting. And by the way, I don't mean that the function of church is necessarily to entertain us. What I mean is that that when we follow the Christian message, I think it's inherently compelling. And if we're just peddling a therapeutic message about feeling okay, that gets pretty boring pretty fast.
Yeah, I was reading a blog last night that I think I might have forwarded on to you, which was
great.
and this gentleman was talking about how the church of conveniency, or that we've fallen into just a convenient, he started labeling people as convenient Christians, that you just, it's whatever is convenient, whatever works for you as a Christian. And he says it does create lazy Christians. And I do think that there's that great book, Almost Christian, by, I think, Kendra Dean. And she talks about that we're just creating a generation of almost Christians, because we don't want to really push them too hard. We kind of want to make it easy. You know, we don't want to, like, let's just, we're a little lackadaisical about it. And what her point is that we're not forming Christians with the grittiness, the excitement, the passion that is behind this, of really what Christianity is all about. And to your point, you're saying that this transformed life, the life is actually greater. The grass is greener when you are seeking and going for a transformation in your life, a deeper meaning, purpose, strength, forgiveness, healing. And why? So one of the reasons I'm hearing from you is we've lost that just because there was conveniency, so we didn't have to really push it. But is there another reason, though, too, behind it? Like, did that laziness just come from because people would just show up and we didn't have to work hard at it? Or was there also a time where in the church we just didn't want to push people too far, or maybe as leaders we got lazy in our own transformation?
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with, and I say this as a priest with all love and sympathy to my colleagues, but I think a lot of the problem is with leaders, with clergy leaders. I think we get fearful. We don't want to say something that might rock the boat, because we know that our salary, our income, is coming from people sitting in the pew who are contributing. And so it's pretty easy and understandable to get fearful of saying something that's going to alienate those people. That's one thing. I think the other thing is that it's not easy to be a clergy leader right now at a time of some decline. And so people get stressed out and they start worrying about maintenance and running a nonprofit instead of preaching the gospel. And it's easy to lose our faith, to forget that we clergy leaders, are transformed. And if I climb up in the pulpit every Sunday and I have a contagious, exciting faith to share, that's compelling and people might want to hear more of that. If I climb up in the pulpit every Sunday and I'm just droning on about something that I'm not really sure I believe, that's not very compelling. But I think it's leaders, it's fear, and it's sometimes we've fallen out of love with that thing that swept us into the calling in the first place.
Mm. Wow, yeah, and there's, I mean, we hear this a lot in preaching or just throughout the church, that Christianity is it's countercultural many times, and that when you get up in the pulpit and you're going to preach a message that you think is really going to go against the current, especially in your own congregation, that can be scary. right? That can be scary. I can understand where some, as a priest, and I've been there before, you're like, will I lose them? If I preach this message, I really feel like it's grounded in the gospel, but I really feel like it's going to really go against the grain of maybe a lot of beliefs in my own parish. That can create a huge amount of conflict. And we've seen leaders, pastors, priests, wherever, in houses of worship. I'm sure it's happened within the Jewish denomination too, is that, you know, people leave. They get up and go, and because they don't agree with what's being preached. But if the preacher really feels like this is really the grittiness and the power of the gospel, you know, I can understand that hesitancy. And but to your saying, when we play that card too much of being too aware and of being countercultural, then we revert back to maybe just being safe.
No, yeah, absolutely. You know, one thing that's a good exercise for anybody who wants to get a sense of this is, if you have a Bible at your house and you just open it up and you read one of the Gospels, there's about three quarters of the way to the back, Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John. If you just sit down and read one of those cover to cover, from start to finish, like a book, you get this sweeping story about this guy named Jesus, and it's a gripping story, and that guy never slows down. There's no small talk. There's not a single bit of small talk in the gospel. It's just this urgent proclamation. And I think in the church, we get complacent and we lose that urgency. It's really easy to do.
Yeah. And you know, I sometimes wonder if maybe sometimes it's looked at as the greatest thing that happened in Christianity. Sometimes I wonder if it's the worst thing. But with Constantine, where you had Constantine come into power, and then Christianity comes from being this grassroots underground religion that you could die, you could literally get killed for, to now it's this big state religion. And that changes everything. But then now everyone becomes Christian. And then how many folks during that time are truly willing to die for the religion, like the early Christians, right? Because they were willing to just give their lives over. And then now it becomes this huge state religion in Rome. And I don't know if you could die if you weren't one, but I know that you were definitely on the outside looking in. And is there any, have you ever wondered about that too? Was that maybe the beginning of sort of this a conveniency that we had when it became the big state religion in Rome?
Well, yeah, it's hard to know. That's certainly a watershed moment. There are others along the way, and I think it's human nature to, you know, you want to sit at the cool kids table, and so it's easy to want to be in tight with power. So, your listeners who are tuning into this may, if they think back to presidential funerals they've seen or other national religious moments, a lot of those take place in Washington National Cathedral, which is a cathedral in our church, in the Episcopal Church. And I can imagine, I've not talked to the people who work there. They're great people who are, you know, who work at that cathedral. I haven't talked to them about this, but I can say if that was me and I was working at that cathedral, I would think to myself, gosh, I don't know if I want to criticize the president or politicians too much, because if I'm too harsh, maybe the next time there's a big funeral, they won't want to have it here, and we'll miss out on the limelight. You know, you get kind of seduced by the attention. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying anything about the people who are there. I think they managed to do this very well. But if it were me, I would find it very seductive to want to be calming and try to be not say anything too mean, because you want to stay close to the center of power, and that attention's good, and maybe you get some money, and maybe that's good. So it's understandable. It's very understandable. It's human nature, but I think it's not what I don't think it's what the gospel calls us to. It's not the way we're called to live.
Right. So to go back to the title of the show, you know, that we have here, that is the church boring us to death? That to your point, that when we get safe, and when we try to make decisions and choices within the church in respect to the power, to the being part of the cool kids club, then we miss out on really the challenge and the passion and the awesome power of the gospel, which is not safe. And then we have to be willing to lose. You have to be willing to risk, I guess, if you're really going to go all in on the gospel. and go all in as a Christian. And how does that affect? Because when I see the title "Is the Church Boring Us to Death," what I think of is what a lot of some people go to is that when they go to church on Sunday morning, you know, I'll hear this from you that it's just boring.
Yep. Right?
So how does that affect? How do we bring that vitality that you're speaking about, that transformational power that is risky, that might rub people the wrong way? How does that get brought to Sunday morning beyond just the preaching?
Well, yeah. So I come from, of course, you know, I'm from the Episcopal Church, which is a liturgical tradition. So we have Holy Communion every week. If I came to church and I was standing there at the altar every week, and I thought that the bread and the wine was a symbol that we were just going through some motions, I'm not going to be very into that, and it's not going to be compelling. In fact, I believe that when we celebrate Holy Communion together, the bread and the wine, as they're consecrated, become the body and blood of Jesus, which is astonishing that Jesus, through whom all things were made, comes into our midst and feeds us and nourishes us every Sunday in bread and in wine is amazing. And I think just that belief and that attitude comes through for people, so it affects the whole liturgy and what we're doing. There's this, Annie Dillard talks about, I don't have the quote in front of me, but she writes about church, and she says, look, if we were taking this stuff seriously, we should be issued crash helmets and life vests, because what we're doing is summoning the awesome power of God to come among us. And if we really believe that stuff, it's dangerous because it's so powerful and so awesome. And we need a little bit more of that and not just going through the motions. So it's not just the preaching, it's the whole thing. I heard a guy read the Bible recently. I was at a service, and he read a lesson from the book of Isaiah. And as one of my friends said, we were watching a live stream together. One of my friends said, he's reading this as if it's the last thing he's ever going to do on earth. I mean, that guy just owned that reading. And I think it's because he probably believes that stuff. And, and if we owned this stuff, if we believed it, if we treated, you know, if we said, this could be the last thing I do, this is the most important thing I'm doing right now, it's compelling, and it matters to people. It shows that it matters to people, and we're not just going through the motions.
Yes. Okay. So I and we're on the air right now with Father Scott Gunn, who is the executive director of Forward Movement Publications. And if you have any, the phone number here is 772-220-9788, 772-220-9788. If you have any questions for Reverend Scott about this topic, about is the church boring us to death, and exploring this reason of why are we starting to also see a decline and this consistent decline, people have been trying to put their finger on it, but why do we have this decline that's going on in the church and also in the synagogue? I'm sure I know the rabbi would agree with that as well if he was here. So, you know, Scott, we have, I was looking at the Gallup polls, and now we have, I think, for at least from the millennial generation, and then I'm assuming it gets even higher when you go to the next generation with, I think, do we call that Gen Z? Is that
yeah. What, yeah, yeah, I
so
think
Gen
so.
Z. So when you have the two generations, and the one Gallup poll I was looking at last night said something that a third of the millennials will not identify with a religion. And I know you're a numbers guy too, so I want to make sure if you see it the same way. That so if you have like a third of the folks who are not identifying with a religion, do you think that third that's out there from the younger generations, are they all atheists, or are they just sort of searching for meaning and a higher power and an understanding of the higher power just through other ways, and they're not aware of the church, or they don't care about the church, or they're just over the church?
Yeah, I think that a lot of people are over it. So there's a book, it came out maybe 10 years ago or so, called Unchristian, published by the Barna Group, and they surveyed younger adults and asked people inside and outside the church about their attitudes toward what they thought about church. And this was not particular denominations, just in general. What do you think about church? And what those young people said when they were asked an open-ended question like that is the number one thing that came across that they said was they think the church is judgmental. And in particular, whether they were liberal or conservative, they thought that the church was focused too much, or focused a lot on sex, on, you know, same-sex marriage, sex outside marriage, whatever, just sex. So so then they were asked, what are the issues that they're facing in their lives? What are the things that you struggle with? And the things they said were stuff like how to maintain relationships, how to deal with my money, and so forth and so on. And in relationships, how to forgive people, you know, a lot of basic stuff. Then they were asked, if you've ever been to church, did you hear sermons or preaching or teaching that helped you with the things that you're struggling with in your life? And the answer was no.
Okay.
So I don't have the book in front of me because I'm on the road right now. But the point is that I think a lot of people conclude that church is obsessed with things that are not relevant to their lives, things that they're not concerned about, and that the church is not, on the other hand, ready to help them figure out how to be a how to be a human, how to flourish in this world. And so I don't blame people. I think that's on the church to do a better, for us to do a better job of our compelling witness. See, if you look at Pope Francis, right, everywhere he goes, he was in New York City a few years ago. He, you know, secular Manhattan, the hub of, you know, secular America, and the Pope's going through there. The whole city came to a screeching halt. Everybody was obsessed with this guy, wanting to be close to him, wanting to see him, and why. He's such a simple witness of the Christian faith. He does stuff, and you read about it, like he was kind to a child who ran up on the stage. He went over and hugged a sick person. He on his own volition, he left his palace and ate dinner with homeless people. He does all this stuff, and every time I read a news story like this, I think, that's awesome that he's doing that. That's my first reaction. My second reaction is, I think that this guy's really good at understanding media. And my third reaction is going to be, this: every single thing he does ought to be so ordinary for every Christian that it's not newsworthy.
Right.
But it is, because we forget these basic ways of living out our faith. And I think, and church does too. So, you know, some dude stands up and preaches about sex all the time, which the Bible barely even talks about. I mean, sure, I do think that it's good to have opinions and do some teaching on that, but that ought to be way down on the priority list. The Bible says way more about money than about sex, but we don't want to talk about money because, of course, we don't want to risk offending people.
Right. Well, this is awesome stuff, and we're going to head to a break here. For those listening, again, the number here is 772-220-9788. If you have thoughts or ideas about why the church is in decline, and when we come back, we want to start talking about, is there hope? Is there hope for the church, at least in America? Because we know that the numbers are different in other countries, but is there hope for the church in America to fulfill what Scott's talking about, to really be this place that gives you this practical knowledge of how to learn how to flourish in life and live this riveting, dynamic life that Jesus was calling his followers to? So we'll be right back in just a couple of minutes with Reverend Scott Gunn from Forward Movement, and to continue this conversation. Stay tuned.
You're listening to A Priest and a Rabbi podcast. If you haven't done so yet, make sure to subscribe. And please leave a rating and a review, 5-star rating and a positive review if you can. We certainly appreciate it. That is the best way to make sure that others out there just like you can find this podcast. If you want to get in contact with Father Christian and Rabbi Durbin, you can do so by emailing apriestandarabbi@gmail.com. And the absolute best way to get a hold of the fellas is to call into the radio show. This podcast airs live on the radio every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on WSTU 1450. And you can listen live online at WSTU1450.com. And if you want to join the show, you can call in to 772-220-9788. That's 772-220-WSTU.
Hey, everyone. This is Father Christian here on A Priest and a Rabbi. So happy for you to be here on this podcast with us. And I want to let you know that I have started a YouTube channel called Your Favorite Christian, and you can check it out on YouTube. And every Monday, I drop a new episode, and it's always through the lens of faith, but taking on different topics such as dating, relationships, marriage, pop culture. I've done one recently where I went out to the art show and talked about how do we find our relationship with God through all the what all the latest artists are doing. Last week was what do women really want in a man, and interviewing different people to be a part of that. So please check that out on YouTube. Subscribe, like, share, put on the notification so you get that every Monday. I also want to let you know of this podcast wouldn't be here if it wasn't for a generous donor from St. Mary's Episcopal Church who wishes to remain anonymous. All he asked, though, was that the information gets out that St. Mary's Episcopal Church here in Stuart has a healing center. And so you can call if you're looking for a counselor, someone to be there for you during a challenging time. And you can call the church at 772-287-3244. We also have a group of Stephen ministers who have been trained, over 50 hours of training, to be with you and walk with you during a time of crisis. They are not counselors. They are trained just to be more of the presence of Christ and walk with you during a time of crisis, whether it's a good crisis of having, oh my gosh, my daughter's about to get married, or if there's something a little bit heavier. So give us a call, 772-287-3244, and I thank that anonymous donor who makes this all possible. All right, God bless you, and enjoy the rest of the podcast. Welcome back, everyone, to the second half of A Priest and a Rabbi. And of course, today we are missing our rabbi. Rabbi Matthew Durbin is on assignment out in Georgia serving the youth of today. And we miss him tremendously. But with us today, we do have Reverend Scott Gunn from Forward Movement. And it is, I would say, it's the largest publication house in the Episcopal Church, and where you can find a tremendous amount of scholarship and guides, and to help you with your own exploration of Christianity, evangelism, and it is just a joy to have him here on the show to be talking about why is the church boring us to death, and to be exploring why is the decline, what's going on with the church, and how does the church recoup from this. So we are continuing on here. So Scott, how you holding up over there?
I'm doing great. And by the way, during that ad break, you talked about travel service. I'm thinking I should call them because I spend all my time on the road, and too much of it is in tiny, uncomfortable airplane seats, and the private jet sounds pretty nice.
Give him a call. Frosh my bill to hook you up with a private jet. And, yeah, I'm sure Forward Movement's got some extra change around for that private jet. You know? Or they might sponsor you. They just might sponsor you.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll go over well. You know that usually pastors and private jets usually does very well today in the media.
Yeah. Well, exactly. No, it's taken what we were talking about earlier to an extreme.
Yeah. So I mean, that came up in the blog that I was looking at, where you look at some of the big Christian leaders that people look at, and you can see where some of the people get why a lot of people get turned away is because they see a lot of pastors who are making some serious coin out there and do have a private jet, or are preaching more of a prosperity-based gospel, and are, you know, a lot of people are into it, you know, because there's many challenges with that, but one of them is that this promise that with your faith and with your commitment to God or to this particular faith, that it's going to reward you financially. So then it becomes more of an ATM. And now we start to, again, miss the whole point of the gospel. So let's get into, again, you know, this. Is there, I guess, because what I want to focus on is there hope for the church? And because we're looking at the numbers, we look at Gallup poll, we look at a lot of the surveys out there, and you and I could definitely agree the numbers are down right across the board for all, would you say, for all major religions? I mean, I've heard that Mormonism is actually doing well and Islam is doing well in America. But from across the board, from like major mainline and even in the non-denominational evangelical world, everyone's hurting. In Judaism, they're hurting. And would you say the reason for that is for many of the reasons that we talked about today so far in the show?
No, exactly. That's exactly right. A lot of, across the board, there are exceptions. And we could talk about the interesting thing, of course, when you look at data, is you see a picture, and then if you find exceptions, is to ask why those exceptions are happening. And there are some. And even in the Episcopal Church, so the Episcopal Church in the last 10 years is down in the United States, our attendance is down 23.5%, almost a quarter in 10 years, which is astonishing. But then there are exceptions. There are individual churches that are thriving, that are growing. And if you go to those places, what you'll find is a leader who is clear on what she or he is doing and is preaching a compelling message and offering compelling leadership, and they're offering compelling liturgy. And they're not trying to be entertaining, but they're compelling, and they're offering the transformational gospel. And those places are doing great. It's just the places that are coasting that are not doing very well.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and the other thing is, at Forward Movement, we have this process called Renewal Works. It's a kind of a whole program for churches to understand their spiritual vitality, spiritual growth in their church. People answer a bunch of questions, and you get a statistical picture of what's going on in the lives of the people in your church. So we've got a lot of data on spiritual vitality in the Episcopal Church. And one of the things that's interesting is the churches, if I look at all the churches we've done, the ones with the highest scores, the most vital congregations, have, without exception, been churches that are outside the majority culture in the United States. So they're ethnically Latino-Hispanic, ethnically Haitian, ethnically something. They're non-Anglo, for lack of a better term, congregations. And you might ask, well, why is that? And to answer that, just a quick story I was in. I mentioned it to you when we were talking briefly. I was in Kenya a couple years ago, and in Nakuru, a town in Kenya, and I was talking to a bishop there who had traveled to the U.S. a couple times, and we were talking about church, and I asked him what he thought about the Episcopal Church, because I knew he'd been to the U.S. a couple times. I said, well, just give it to me straight. What do you think? And he said, this very wise man said, the problem that you have in the Episcopal Church is that you have too much. And he meant too much everything, too much stuff, too much money. And he said, the problem is when you have too much stuff, it's easy to take God for granted. And it's easy to think that you have what you need. And here in Nakuru in Kenya, we don't have enough. And so we realize every day that we need God, that God is the center of who we are, and that what we have comes from God. And I think that story gets right to the heart of it, is when we take for granted God's presence in our lives, when we take for granted what it means to follow Jesus, then church just becomes a convenience, a habit, something to show, and that's just not compelling. Why would anybody sign up for that? If that's what I want, I'm going to go to the coffee shop or join the Y or volunteer for Habitat or something, because they're better at it.
So do you think the churches that are thriving here in the States are ones that have found that balance of sifting through all the extra stuff that we have in our lives as Westerners and getting to the core of what it means to find true wealth in the spiritual life and in a Christian context and in a relationship with Jesus? Have they found that balance of being able to just have a good perspective?
Yeah, I think it's a good perspective. I think what they do is they're able to talk about how, fundamentally, one of the messages of Jesus is it's not about you, it's about God. It's about, God the Father. It's about following, and whether you're rich or poor, it's not about your stuff. It's about living the way God hopes we live, and I think that message can change our lives. And it says we still have our stuff, but the stuff's not our salvation. And I think it's that's a challenging message to offer. It's a challenging message to live, but it's a way better way to live, because then I don't have to judge my self-worth on what my job title is or what my house looks like or what my car looks like.
Yeah, I think that, getting back to the practical aspect of what, because I've heard that before, when I've asked the youth of my congregation of what really works for them, and they'll say, the sermons that are so practical about how just to do life, how to figure out life, because it's, I can only speak from my context. I mean, there's so many people just in general who are they're searching for meaning. They're searching for purpose. And it's not like everyone's like, hey, man, I'm good. I don't think I need church. I feel great. I'm grounded. I know where I'm going. I know what I'm doing. I've got a great support system. I mean, there's people are still hungering for grounding in something that's beyond themselves, and they're seeking, and you and I've talked about this before, that there's no wonder that yoga studios are just blossoming all over the place, and places like AA do very well just because they do this thing that our good friend Jay Sidebotham talks about this. I mean, they promise transformation. They offer it, and they say, you come in here, you come to AA, you come to yoga, and your life, we're preaching and offering you a changed life. And people are really hungry for that. And is there hope for the church to be that place again and say, yes, we believe in that. We're not just a social club. We're not just a place that's here to judge. We're not just a place to talk about topics that maybe are really they're the most important topics to talk about. No, we want to talk about a transformed life where you find more peace, more joy, more compassion, more hope, and more strength. And is there hope for that?
Exactly. So one of the ways I think about it are the messages that we get in our culture, just out there from media, from everywhere. We're kind of living on a hamster wheel. We're just running on this wheel, and the faster we run, the faster the wheel goes. And the messages are stuff like, you don't look good. You don't look right. You need to lose weight. You need to have different hair, different skin. You don't look right. The messages are, you don't have the right stuff. You need the new shiny phone. You need the new shiny car. You need a bigger house. You don't have the right stuff. And the messages are, you should be afraid. Those people are out to get you. This thing is going to hurt you. Just be afraid. And it's this hamster wheel. And the more you run, you try to be safe. You try to look right. You try to have the right stuff. It's exhausting, and you try to work harder. And there's no winning that game. And so what the church ought to offer is a way to step off the hamster wheel and say, you know what? I don't even have to be on that hamster wheel at all, because I don't have to try to look better, because I'm made in God's image. And if I'm made in God's image, how could I possibly be more beautiful? Because I'm already reflecting the glory of God. It doesn't matter. You don't have to lose weight or change your hair, or change your skin, because you're reflecting the glory of God. That's amazing. You don't need stuff. Stuff isn't your salvation. In fact, probably stuff is getting in the way. And if you got rid of some stuff, you'd probably be happier. Mm. And Jesus said over and over again, do not be afraid. What can those people do to you? What can that thing do to you? And so it's this way to step off the hamster wheel and realize that we're fearfully and wonderfully made, that God loves us, that we can share that love with other people, that we don't have to live on this hamster wheel of always trying to be a better person, of always trying to look better, have better stuff, that we don't have to be better because we've already got it as good as it is. And I think that message, when people hear that and when they begin to believe that, it offers a kind of joy that you just can't get from stuff.
And how does that message get out? How does that get out more? Like that sounded so practical about the bounty that is available in following in committing to let's say from our context, the Christian faith. And I think that people could put a finger on that and say, well, I want that. I want more of that. From a national perspective, and you've probably read all the reports and you got your ear to the ground. When people think of, let's say, the Christian faith in America, what do you think are the first ideas that come to their mind? Is it this really groundbreaking, practical way that can transform your life and find you an incredible amount of peace in the midst of all the chaos that we have in this world today? And it makes you a better person to really want to love others and to love yourself and to love this higher power that's beyond yourself. Is that what comes to people's minds, or are we still caught up that when people think of Christianity in the States, they're going to think of a place that's caught up in sexuality, a place that's caught up in judgment. Are those still the prevailing themes that come up about the church these days?
Yeah, I think so. I think in the there are exceptions to this, of course, but I think in general, if I show up in a church that's traditionally, I don't always like these labels, but we're speaking in shorthand here, but churches that tend to be more conservative, they might offer a message that's on a certain subset of moral issues, and you know, it's a way to label people and divide people, and obsess about sex or whatever. And in churches that are liberal, it's just this kind of boring, feel-good nonsense. I have a friend of mine moved. I have a friend of mine moved who's an Episcopalian, and she was looking for a new church, and she moved to a town, and she wanted to join a church. And she told me, I found out she couldn't find a church. And why couldn't she find a church? Because she said, all I want to do is I want to go to church, and I want to learn about Jesus. I want to learn about how to follow Jesus. And I went in, you know, six churches, and nobody was in there talking about how to follow Jesus. And honestly, if we're not doing that, it's just time to close up, and it's just time to lock the doors and close up.
Right.
And so I think, you know, it's not, none of this is rocket science. It's not hard. I think there are lots of different ways to live the gospel. You know, you can be a Presbyterian, an Evangelical, an Episcopalian, a Congregationalist, a Baptist, whatever. I'm not saying I'm head over heels in love with the Episcopal Church, but I'm not here to say it's the only way to go. There are different ways, different expressions of faith, but it's really not complicated. It's talking about the compelling way of how do I follow Jesus? What does that look like? Or whatever. I mean, if your rabbi was on here, I would say, I mean, it's not all that different to say, what does it mean to live according to the Torah, to live the law, to live as if we believe these stories are true of God's love for humanity. And I think if we start asking those kinds of questions, gosh, it'll change our lives and change the world.
Yes, sir. No, yes, sir. It's extremely well said. Let me ask you a question. Have we been here before? I feel like that in the States right now, I mean, I know the church is flourishing in the global South, but in the States, it seems like there's a crisis where people are really alarmed. Like, these numbers keep on going down. The church numbers are going down. Are they going to continue to go down? Many people would say, I think atheists would say, yeah, eventually it's just going to die. You know, the church will die. Have we been here before in the history of the church where there's been this alarm that went out of like, holy cow, numbers are going down, people are not showing up, we live in this very, we live in a culture that wants nothing to do with God and nothing to the church. Have we seen this pattern before, or is this something very brand new, at least, to the Western church?
Yeah, no, I don't think it's new. I'm not an expert on the history of religion or even American religion. I can tell you that the 1950s and 60s were a high watermark for church attendance because we had to beat the commies, and the way to beat the commies was to prove how God-fearing Americans we were by getting yourself to church. And so, you know, ironically, there's a kind of secular impulse for the rise of that kind of church attendance. But no, you know, people have this idea of the founding of America. Those people were all deists. George Washington and all those people, you know, some of them went to church, but they were mostly deists, and church attendance was not all that high. And there have been other concerns about it. What's different now, the key difference now is that as I understand it, for the first time in at least U.S. history, there's now positive peer pressure not to go to church. Hmm. So up until pretty recently, if you were trying to thrive in a community, there was some peer pressure to be part of a religious community in order to be a successful member of a community. Getting up and going to church on Sunday or going to the temple or the synagogue or the mosque or whatever was seen as a good thing to do. Oh, look at my neighbor. He's going to worship. That's cool. Now, especially among younger generations, there is not positive peer pressure. There's negative peer pressure. Eyebrows grow up and questions are raised. Why is that person going to church or mosque or synagogue or temple? And I think if the church doesn't change that, then things dry up pretty quickly. So yeah, that's different.
And the church changes that by how?
Well, I think so. Ironically, Jesus said those who would lose their life would find it. That the church has to lose its anxiety about, are we shrinking or dying? How many people are coming to our committee meetings? How much money are we getting? And the church has to say the most important thing and the only thing that matters is, are we making followers of Jesus? Are we telling people and showing people how to follow Jesus? Are we making more followers of Jesus? And that has to matter more than whether my church building survives, more than the stained glass windows, more than the pews. And then you can start to ask questions like, not how do I get young people to like organ music? Actually, they probably do like organ music. How do I get young people to like whatever? It's how can we offer a compelling witness to what it means to follow Jesus? And if we do that, then people are more likely to want to be around church.
So if and we're coming here closer to the end here, here's a question for you. If Jesus came and spoke to the church today and just showed up, what do you think Jesus would say to the, and again, we have to put this in our context, the context we've been talking about the whole time, which is really the state of the church in America today. What would be Jesus' message to the church?
I believe that, and I want to try to say this carefully, Jesus would not care about the state of the institutional church the same way he was ready to challenge the temple in his time and go in and turn over the tables and go in and say shocking things in the synagogue. I don't think in his time he was going around saying, we need to prop up the temple to make sure it's strong. We need to prop up the synagogues to make their strong. What Jesus was always saying was, what matters is what's the message being proclaimed and what's it doing in people's lives. Is it offering people freedom and repentance and joy and salvation, or is it offering them captivity to whatever? And I think what Jesus would do today is he would show up. Reggie McNeil, I heard him speak a few years ago, famous kind of evangelical preacher. He said if Jesus came back today, he would say, you raised to church leaders, if Jesus came to a church leadership conference, he would say, you raised how many billion dollars in Sunday offering plates, and there are still children in your cities who can't read? What is wrong with you people?
Right.
Why didn't you use some of that money to teach children how to read? And this is not some like liberal social justice guy. This is Reggie McNeil, like, you know, evangelical. And I think what Jesus would say is, don't worry about your stained glass windows, your vestments, your pews, your whatever. All that stuff's fine if it's making followers of Jesus. What matters is what's happening in your lives and what's happening in the lives of your neighbors. Are you loving your neighbors? And I think we would not do well in that test if he showed up today.
Well, this is all such great stuff. It's got to have you on the show today, and we're getting near here, and it's just been so good to have you in here. I know you're on the road, you're touring, and if people want to find you, I know you're a great social media guy, and you're very active on Twitter. So, if people want to find you, they can find you at Scott A. Gunn.
That's exactly right. ScottAGunn on Twitter. And you can learn about Forward Movement where I work at forwardmovement.org on the internet. And I would love to be in touch with folks.
Yeah, so Scott's a great resource. So God bless you, Scott. Thank you so much for being on the show. And we'll catch you on the next one, brother. It would be great to have you on sometime in the future, brother.
Yeah, thanks so much for inviting me. It was an honor. And I'd love to be on when your rabbi friend is here as well. It would be great to talk to him, too.
Yes, sir. All right, God bless you, brother, in your travels.
God bless you. Thank you.
All right, that's another episode here of A Priest and a Rabbi, and come back next week where the rabbi is back. Of course, you can always catch all these on our podcast if you just search A Priest and a Rabbi on all major platforms, on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts, and you catch all of our different episodes. And also, if you ever want to watch this wacky guy, me, Father Christian, I have a vlog called Your Favorite Christian. So you go on YouTube, Your Favorite Christian. It's the daily walk of a priest, just getting involved with all kind of wacky things. But God bless you, and to go out there and live the truth. Peace.